Well, I run out of things to say to start this, so I'm just going to say, hey, it's Food Mensch time. We're lucky. And it's Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, and I bet a lot of people are hanging on to your every word, so...
Well, I know there are quite a few people who are interested in pot pie the way I am, because I've been getting a lot of mail about pot pie. Some very good suggestions. I have not been able to follow up on all of them, particularly the one that's in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, but I'm going to get there. I'm now on the pot pie trail. So, and in fact, this week, I went back and ate a KFC pot pie. I say went back because I have been touting it, and one of our listeners did, against her better judgment, she and her husband went and got pot pies at KFC, and they liked them. Now, I'm not saying this is the best pot pie in the world. I'm not saying that every KFC is equal. They are not. At some, I've discovered they're better than others. In any case, it's a very good pot pie. This week, however, my neighbor, who shops at the Park Slope Food Co-op, which is the oldest food co-op in the country and used to be the largest. I don't know if it still is. But anyway, it's a very important food co-op. And anything you buy at the food co-op is supposedly has supposedly passed what I call the hoo-ha test. Hoo-ha is a Yiddish expression of sarcasm when you say something is special. Or you can use it in a lot of different ways. In fact, I think if you look it up in The Joys of Yiddish, Leo Rostin, the author, is a wonderful book, if you're interested at all in Yiddish, because not only does he define the word, but then he gives an example which invariably is a joke. So anyway, hoo-ha. So everything at the Park Slope Food Co-op, you know, is organic or handcrafted or don't ask. So the chicken pot pie, however, is a brand called Blake's. Now, Ellen, who has generally good taste, did say to me she bought it, but she has yet to taste it, but she was curious as well. It wasn't that she likes this chicken pot pie, but she had it in her freezer, and she passed it on to me, and it was by far the worst pot pie I've had so far, though it is organic. The box says it's made with organic vegetables and flaky organic crust. The crust was not flaky. It didn't look anything like the crust shown on the box as a, quote, serving suggestion. It also was not chock-a-block with vegetables and chicken the way the serving suggestion suggests. And it was bland. It was worse. I had two forkfuls. Then I let it cool down a bit. I thought, oh, you know, sometimes things taste better when they're a little cooler. They're not piping out of the oven. Didn't improve at all. In fact, if anything, it got worse. So no artificial colors, no artificial flavors. Well, actually, no flavor. No preservatives. It's a frozen product. At 400 degrees, it takes 40 minutes. I had a laugh at what they call express cooking directions, which is not strictly microwave. It's half microwave, you put it in. By the way, there's got to be a typo here. It says, oh, no, I understand now. So after you've microwaved the thing for a few minutes, you then put it in the oven for only 20 to 22 minutes. I don't, it says
is
until
it,
the crust gets lightly browned. I don't think it'll ever get
top?
Brown. What?
It isn't a top?
I'm sorry, I'm missing what you're saying.
I just asked to put it in the oven. Is it to brown the top?
No, well, I think what it is you're defrosting it in the microwave,
oh,
and then it doesn't take as long to cook in the oven. What happens to the crust, I don't know. You, Jill, have suggested that they put something in the crust to make it crispy, even if you're putting it in the microwave. But let me say, even conventional baking, as I did, 400 degrees for 40 minutes, the crust was like a piece of cardboard. There was no way that was ever going to be edible. I had literally two bites, and I said, no, I can't eat this. So we still go on. I've gotten a suggestion of Trader Joe's. I unfortunately did not get to Trader Joe's since I got that suggestion, but I'm eager to try Trader Joe's pot pies. I have heard from a friend that he, on occasion, buys a Trader Joe pot pie and enjoys it. So, all right, we'll try it. And then, so that's it for this week, the pot pie report. What I have gotten lately, I don't know what's something in the air, Jill, but I'm getting a lot of questions about carbs specifically and nutrition in general. Now, let me say, I am not a nutritionist. I'm not trained in this. I only have been reading about it for 50-some-odd years since I started my career as a food writer. I've always been interested in nutrition. I've always not always listened to my own advice. But as you get older, and I mean over 40, you start getting more interest, at least in our day and age, you get more interested in nutrition. I know this from my nephew and niece. My nieces, they're both, Brian is pescatarian, and Rachel is totally vegetarian, not vegan, though, just vegetarian. And I know they eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. And anyway, so let me say that what in my own life, and I am diabetic, I have it well under control, I have learned that what's good for a diabetic is good for everybody. And that means you need a diet that is high in fiber, lean, if you can do it, protein, and lots of fruit and vegetables. Now, not all fruits and vegetables are created equal. The dirty word in our current culture is carbohydrate, carbs. But when people talk about carbs being villainous, they're talking about the white carbohydrates, meaning mainly white flour, which is what most bread is made with, even what they call whole wheat bread. I have to say I call it beige bread. It's really just slightly whole wheated. White bread, white rice, potatoes and pasta. Now, I think the order should be rice and white bread are the worst, and I totally avoid them as much as unless sometimes I get really fabulous white flour bread, and I'll eat it with a nice crust. However, most is not interesting to me. And then there's rice is the real bad one. Rice, for a diabetic, is terrible. But, and I have learned, by the way, a lot of Chinese dishes, I don't mean to cook, but to order in a restaurant, that don't really cry out for rice. Certain things do cry out for rice. Like, and in fact, if you think about it, if you were eating like a Chinese person or most Asian people, you'd be eating rice at least one, if not two meals a day. But it's always with some other food, something that has a lot of vegetables and or meat, fish, poultry. And in fact, I don't know if anybody defines it this way. I was once told by a Chinese friend that the other dishes that are not rice are called rice-sending food. Now, if you're a hardworking rural person, meaning physically hardworking, you need a lot of calories, and so rice provides a lot of calories. What provides nutrition is the stuff you eat with the rice. It's the same with pasta, except pasta on its own does have redeeming values. Rice is strictly calories. Strictly calories. No redeeming value except that it makes other foods go down easy or bulk them up and give you calories if you need them. In our sedentary lifestyle, most people don't need the extra calories. The only reason they're eating rice is because they like it. As far as pasta goes, I don't eat whole wheat pasta. There are a few ways of dressing whole wheat pasta that I like, but mostly I don't eat whole wheat pasta because I don't enjoy it as much as regular pasta. And regular pasta should be made with high-protein wheat. And I look at the label. I have to say, if you're nutrition conscious, you really, really have to learn how to read labels. And I always have, until very recently, insisted that I'm not going to buy pasta that has fewer than 7 grams of protein per 2 ounce serving, which is on the package. However, with that pasta, we always eat some vegetables. So between the 7 grams of protein provided in, really a 2 ounce serving, by the way, is enough if you're doing some things, but mostly Bob and I eat 3 ounces. And yesterday we needed particularly calming because I had a usually stressful bank incident happen over the weekend. Well, started on Friday. So I decided I needed to calm down with a bowl of spaghetti. So that does calm me down, by the way, well, at least temporarily. But most of the time I eat that spaghetti with a vegetable. And the vegetable provides fiber. The spaghetti does not have much fiber, if any. It's very like a gram or so. But you want to add fiber to your diet. So let's say macaroni and broccoli. Macaroni and zucchini. The zucchini is now nice. I'm going to eat a lot of zucchini. A good bulk-up vegetable. By the way, I learned this from being on keto for a year and a half, that above-ground vegetables, generalization here, has less sugar, I should put it that way, than vegetables grown under the ground. On the other hand, beets are not terrible, and they have a lot of fiber. Carrots have more sugar than you think. Onions even have a nice amount of sugar. But above-ground vegetables like zucchini, any of the squash family, even the winter squashes, the hard-shell squashes, don't have that much carbohydrate. And certainly the summer squashes have almost nil. Broccoli, any greens at all, spinach, collards, kale, none of those have any significant. They have so much fiber, it doesn't matter. And vitamins and minerals, it doesn't matter. The other one is beans. Beans have a lot of fiber. They are a carbohydrate, but they're digested very slowly, not only because they have a lot of protein, but because the way we eat them. You don't be afraid of fats and oil, because adding a fat to something, like, let's say, macaroni with boiled zucchini, adding oil to that, also aids in the slow digestion of the carbohydrates. Whenever you eat carbohydrates, think fat and protein. Fat and protein. If you do it all together, it doesn't have to be the same dish. You can have your pasta with zucchini, olive oil, let's say chopped garlic, salt, pepper, and then have some protein like grilled shrimp. I don't like to put it all together in one plate. It gives me an opportunity to have another vegetable. Today we're going to have tomato salad. That tomatoes are wonderful if you're looking for fiber and almost no calories. So that's the balance you want to have. Calories, fiber, fat, protein. And you don't need nearly as much protein as you think you do. So that's my nutrition thing for the week. So I said I almost never buy pasta that has fewer than 7 grams of protein per 2 ounce serving. However, my nephew accidentally bought some gross amount of Garofalo organic pasta, and so he shared it with me. And I think he gave me 10 pounds of spaghetti. So, and it tastes good. It's a taste good pasta. Garofalo is made on the in Gragnano, on the Sorrento Peninsula, famous pasta town, famous pasta company. It's a popular brand in Italy as well. Anyway, normal Garofalo has the 7 grams of protein that I'm looking for. This organic Garofalo, interestingly, this wheat that the organic Garofalo is made from only has 6 grams of protein per 2 ounce serving. I can't taste the difference, gotta say. But I thought it was interesting that the organic version was had less protein than the regular version. There's another brand out there that I keep seeing on sale in different places. Rumo. Have you seen Rumo? R-U-M-M-O. Some of the Rumo shapes have 8 grams of protein. So it's all, and I learned this from going to pasta factories in Italy. It's all about the protein content of the wheat. And the higher the protein content, the better. It's not all about, but that's one of the key. That's a key factor. And another key factor is how long or short a time is used to dry the pasta. And a lot of companies have a box or bag that it is slow dry. That is a plus. And then the third thing, I don't know how I got onto pasta quality, because we're talking about carbohydrates. The third thing is, is it extruded by bronze or not? So this has become a thing among less than perfectly knowledgeable people that the most important thing is that bronze dyes are used. So bronze is great because it provides a more uneven surface than do, for instance, Barilla, who uses Teflon or no-stick-lined dyes to get the speed of production that they want at Barilla. But these smaller pasta factories can slow dry. I mean, there's a lot of business about the slow drying. Anyway, so those are the three main factors. Now, there's potatoes. I'm lately eating more potato than I used to. Potatoes have redeeming values in that they have vitamin C, they have fiber, and, of course, they have calories, and that means that you can't eat a lot of them. But anyway, if you pair your potatoes with a protein, like, say, you have steak and potatoes and a salad, it's actually a pretty well-balanced meal, a classic American meal. By the way, when I started as a food writer in 1969, the number one meal in America was steak, some kind of potato, and a salad. Today, number one meal. So some things don't change, and they don't change for a reason, because besides that it's delicious, and America is a beef culture, Europe is not a beef culture. Europe is more of a pork culture. But we had all those ranges in our history that produced a beef culture. Interestingly, didn't produce a sheep culture, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, that's a pretty healthy meal. Now, dessert. Now, dessert, interestingly, I think there's some kind of understanding in humanity that sweets come at the end of a meal, because I don't really know of any cuisine where the sweet comes at the beginning of the meal. And the truth is, if you have your sweet at the end of the meal, it's not nearly as, the sugary part of it is not nearly as bad for you as if you ate it on its own. So, you know, having a candy bar in the middle of the day ain't so good. On the other hand, having a nice pudding or cake after a nice meal that had lots of protein, fat, and fiber is fine. And your blood sugar, I know this as a diabetic, but it's the same for everybody, will be much happier if it had other food first. So that's why sweets are at the end of a meal. I know in Lancaster County, they used to, I think it was Groff's. Did you hear of Groff's Family Restaurant? Betty Groff was the mastermind of Groff's Family Restaurant. And she ended up writing, I think, two cookbooks of Pennsylvania Dutch food. I should go, I'm pretty sure I have it here somewhere. Well, it should be in the regional American section here. Anyway, Betty Groff was more a Mennonite, and she did serve a dessert first at her restaurant. I'm reminded of this by Bob all the time, who loved this restaurant also. We separately loved this restaurant, which had probably the best Pennsylvania Dutch food at the time. I don't know where you go to now, except for the place that, I'm forgetting the name, but I have it written down here, one of our listeners said I should go to for pot pie. I bet you, you know, in Pennsylvania Dutch country, you got to be careful. Pot pie is not the same as pot pie. Pot pie is a chicken stew with these very heavy noodles in it. And pot pie is what we think of as pot pie. A crusted over cream chicken dish. So that's my little nutrition lesson for the week. I hope I didn't bore everybody. Yes, Jill?
I'm just going to say it sounds perfectly reasonable. I don't have anything to complain about.
Okay, good. So I'm going to continue with my banking crisis here. Just a warning to everybody. I mean, what this crisis has taught me is that you can't trust anybody, which my mother taught me long ago, but I seem to forget. And
do you think that you will need more carbs to comfort you?
You know what we're going to have today to comfort me, and it is a carb. Matzah brei. I don't know what got into me this morning, but I decided I had to have matzah brei. I also have, I'll get some carbs in me.
All right, well,
here's the deal. This case of mine is so, I don't even know how to characterize it, that the FBI is in on it. The bank that I deal with is suspect, and it's a major bank. So that's very stressful. And also, you know, as everybody knows now, you can't trust your email or messages to be legitimate. So, you know, be careful of
everybody
what email.
Everybody has to literally pay attention. This is a very good time to do what your parents told you. Pay attention.
Yes, you have to pay attention.
All right.
It's amazing what people can do.
We thank you, as ever, for paying attention to us.
Well, of course.
And we will talk to you soon.
Love to, Bob. All right, and I hope to have another delicious pot pie report. not a panning, Blake's. Oh, I just have to add, this Blake's pot pie that was so terrible is made by Conagra, which is this conglomerate food company. And truthfully, I didn't expect it that they would have something sold at the Park Slope Co-op because, you know, it's so commercial. But in fact, you know, even Conagra is cashing in on the word organic.
And the complication, of course, with Conagra is, you know, that's institutional food, folks. That's what you are that's what you're feeding your kids at school, and that's what you're feeding your seniors.
Yes, yes.
And that's just not
so
okay.
You reminded me. I'm going to sign off with this one, though.
All right.
You know Sylvia's, the soul food restaurant in Harlem?
Yeah.
I was friendly with Sylvia and herself. She's long gone. I think it's her grandchildren who operate Sylvia's now. But anyway, we once were at the Daily News early on, so this had to be late 70s, early 80s. We were tasting commercial Thanksgiving stuffing, well, boxed stuffing and all different stuffing that you could purchase. And Sylvia said, "You think people really feed this to their children?" And the answer was yes, they did feed that to their children. I think we know better now. It's 50 years later. Okay, kids. Everybody have a great week. And
you too. Good luck with your issues.
And, yeah, I need to call the security department of my bank now. Take care.
All right. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.